This is the podcast for October 14th, 2011. It's not safe for work. Recorded live from just outside the rim of the mile-wide Rick Perry campaign crater.
It's the professional left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
It's not safe for work.
I hate you.
I know you do. You're a very good sound editor.
Well, we were recording it from the 16th century, I think, weren't we?
We were. Actually, we're using merely 16th century technology right now to record the podcast.
It's amazing. That time machine that Rick Perry goes through is just...
I can forgive all kinds of people making one mistake or two.
Oh, yeah. And under the pressure of being in a live debate, it's got to be really hard. And you can't you can over-prepare, as we know from watching the Arizona governor, Jan Brewer. Brewer.
Uh-huh.
Insane. You know, she just over-prepared to the point where she couldn't even talk.
Her brain shut down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that happens. You know, so I have a lot of respect for the amount of poise that all of them have to sit there and answer questions from each other on the spot. You know, that's hard.
But when the mistake you make underscores the caricature that you are building for yourself in the media.
Yeah.
That's when Gerald Ford falls down for the last time.
Exactly. Yep.
But it was watching a group of spirited people who have no concern whatsoever that nothing they say has any relationship to reality whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Their economics, their grasp of foreign policy, taxation, deficits, what Obama actually has said and done, what he hasn't said and done, anything. Nothing they said or any relationship to the world as it exists now. But that's okay, because what they were doing was throwing wingnut gang signs at Tea Partiers, because that's who's going to get them, you know, the nomination. So they were frantically, you know, cranking out the word salad that these people need to tickle their amygdala and get them to the polls and vote for them. Yep. You know what it was like? It was like watching an election in a foreign country.
Yes, and you don't know anything about the provincial elections of that country.
Exactly.
Or what's happening in the provinces, and they start screaming at each other about the provinces, and you have no idea. But you think that it might be true what they're saying. You don't know.
Yeah, because they all seem to know about it, and they all seem to have very passionate opinions about the 403 byway and why the 403 byway is going to destroy this country. And then you're like, wait a minute.
This is my country. This is where I live.
Yeah, then you notice, wait a minute, they're talking about America, but no America I've ever heard of before.
Right, right.
And so as a measure of who's going to win the elections, this, the 75th debate in a row, you know, is irrelevant to me because I'm not going to vote in a Republican primary. I'm not going to vote for a Republican at the national level ever in my lifetime. What I am going to do, it's very useful to do is watch these great sheets of litmus paper of what the id and the ego of the conservative movement in this country look like get smeared across this litmus paper. And you can just see, oh, God, this is really what they think. This is what their poll testers and their professionals and their campaign advisors tell them they have to say to win the hearts and minds of the pig people, as I call them.
Right.
And that just – it's incredibly sad to watch how debased and depraved the right has become, that we just shrug this off. Yeah, you know, they're nuts.
Well, I think I think the difference between the left and the right at that level is the degree of heartbreak, because the right cannot accept heartbreak as part of their DNA.
No.
And so we on the left say, okay, we're going to vote essentially for Obama because we're voting against the other person, and we do it with a sense of heartbreak.
Yeah.
Whereas all of this anti-Obama stuff, there was some person, I can't remember where the post was I read today, that had the debate in six lines, and it was, what about the economy? And ignore the question and slam Obama. And then, what about jobs? Ignore the question, slam Obama. What about, and it was just, you know, Obama's got to be a one-term president, and we've got to do everything to undo everything Obama did. And there's no regret that that's what you're doing. I don't know whether that's a function of the fact that Obama is in the White House, and therefore, they just have to run against him because he's the occupant of the office. Or whether there really is a difference. Do you understand what I'm saying? A difference between we're saying we would like to be voting for something, but we've kind of given up on that because there is no other nominee to run. And primarying him is impossible. What do you think?
I think it's more a matter of that there is no other electorate.
Yeah.
There is no way to motivate the, you know, yep. the pig people to the polls without amping up the crazy. Yeah. There's just no way to get them to they don't know how to think outside of the liberals or traitors and this scary Negro from Chicago with his Saul Alinsky background and his George Soros money, his vaguely yeah. communist.
Well, that's all money. A function of Fox News and Rush Limbaugh.
Well, yeah, but that predates them. I mean, this is the yeah. Birchers. This is going back 50 years. These are the same people.
Yeah.
And they pass their, you know, like hemophilia, they pass their disease along to their children. So now you have the second and third generation of bigots and Birchers and Klansmen and bears, oh my, all reacting reflexively to the same buttons. Mm-hmm. You push this button and you get these people to shout amen. You push that button, you get them to shout hallelujah. And the people who sit behind these candidates playing the organ are playing an organ. Okay, we need so many, you know, so many of this note and so many of this note mm-hmm. and so many black keys and so many white keys played in this order will get us the election. And they know to a fare thee well what their constituents need to hear to get them to the polls. Mm-hmm. And they've been working on this for – this is not an accident. That's the tragedy of this. This is what the Republican Party wanted.
Yeah.
This is what they've worked their entire lives to create, mm-hmm. an electorate who are completely automaton, who will go to the polls and do what they're fucking well told by Roger Ailes and Rupert Murdoch and Rush Limbaugh.
And believe
and
when they go to bed that night that they're voting against government.
Yes.
When government is simply serving the needs of the oligarchy and the industrial complex, that's military industrial yeah. complex, that's it.
And so whether they hate that scary black man from Chicago because it's utilitarian to do mm-hmm. so, mm-hmm. or they really do hate him is irrelevant.
I want to talk for a minute about Democrats, because I've been getting lots of emails, maybe you have too. First of all, people, stop emailing me Glenn Greenwald articles. I read Glenn Greenwald, okay?
Yeah.
That's
I know
fine.
Where
we know where to find him.
Yeah, it's not hard to find.
It's not hard to find. And he had a very long article today about why the Democratic Party can't co-opt the Wall Street protests because the Democratic Party is in bed with Wall Street, and had a lot of evidence to that effect. And
yeah.
I totally get that. But as I wrote to one of the correspondents who sent me, you know, for the third time, a Glenn Greenwald article today, you know, it just,
I know.
Thank you.
I know.
There are a number of people on Wall Street who would happily pay an extra $6,000 in taxes.
Yes.
And rewrite the student loan provisions in
yes.
order to keep such a friendly Democrat in the White
yes.
House.
Yes. It's cheap. It's cheap. Pennies on the dollar. Are you kidding me? They would happen. They'd be thrilled to do that.
So,
yeah.
you know, this idea that somehow the public is going to recognize this as anything, or the media even, mm-hmm. is going to recognize this as, oh, but you know, the subtlety of it is that Obama does lots of things for Wall Street. No, this, when Obama goes out and gives speech after speech after speech about this jobs bill and says, this is going to be about making billionaires pay their fair share. The billionaires, the ones that are smart, and there are some smart ones out there, are going to say, look, we'll pay it. You know, I'm not going to fight this.
Yeah.
They'll fight it because the ones that are, you know, Koch brothers are going to fight it because they like power.
Mm-hmm.
But there's going to be some that are, I mean, didn't Obama say he was going to raise $1 billion for his campaign? Where's he raising it from? From these
yeah.
guys.
Yeah.
From these New York billionaires who are Democrats, but mm-hmm. they have a very friendly Democrat in the White House. So,
you can apply exactly the same reasoning to this notion that business will do nothing. First of all, the business is a monolith, but business will do nothing unless you have certainty. You know, there hasn't been certainty since Adam and Eve were kicked out of the friggin' garden.
Yep.
There was much higher taxation and much greater uncertainty during the Clinton administration. Business did just fine.
During World War II.
Yeah. You know, the whole idea is it's a risk.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
you're not sure of the future, and you're betting your idea is going to be good enough to carry you through. But this notion that you have to have an absolutely calm, perfectly predictable business environment before business will risk one fucking dime on anything is so incredibly stupid
yep.
and laughable. And really, how stupid do you have to be to believe things like that? But they say it. And if I'm a business person, I'm going to go, yeah, sure. You're going to get rid of some of the regulations that bug me? Well, hell yeah, I'm for that. Mm-hmm. But yes, you can get almost any business person to say, or any American to say, I'm overtaxed and overregulated. That doesn't mean they really are.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that they're like hugely overtaxed or hugely over. They're inconvenienced.
Yep.
They're pinched and they'd rather not be. And you're going to put a couple of bucks in my pocket. That's great. But are those people going to fight and die on that hill? No.
No, it's
two
purses for Kim Kardashian. That's what Barack Obama is talking about.
He's talking about the Clinton era.
Yeah, yeah.
He's talking about bringing back the Clinton era with some better regulation so that banks can't bend us over the capitalist barrel and fuck us anymore. That's all he's talking about.
And the smart capitalists understand that. And whatever's going on in the streets is not their concern. And that's too bad because it should be.
The idea that that is called socialism and creeping communism and committed Marxism by the right is not a surprise because that's who these lying traitors are.
And Glenn Beck saying they want to kill you if you have money. Yeah. The mob on the street wants to kill you. Yeah.
And just so we're clear, we're not being hyperbolic.
No, he said that.
The Wall Street protesters, if you're rich, if you have money, if you're successful, want to drag you into the streets and murder you, period, full stop. And he's still on the air today.
Yeah.
Why he hasn't been shut down and run out of town on a rail is the tragedy. It's not that he says crazy shit like that. It's that there are just enough people in this country who have been, I don't know, sipping gasoline or screwing their relatives for the past four generations that are actually stupid enough and bigoted enough and terrified enough to believe this shit.
Or at least put up with it so they'll tune in again tomorrow. And that's crazy.
And they will run through the streets screaming with their hair on fire right up until President Romney is nominated.
Yeah.
And then they'll go back to being quiet about anything Republican.
Well, we're asleep now. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, these are the same people who were shrieking their fucking heads off when Bill Clinton was elected, that he had to clean up the Bush-Reagan deficits, that he had to put everything on hold and work on deficits. And he did. And he did, and he did, and he did. He did a lot of things that progressives like me and liberals like me disagree with. But he did those things. And then they impeached him.
Yeah.
But that's the tragedy and
the method of operation.
That's the tragedy of being liberal and the advantage of being liberal is – I can remember that.
Yeah.
Apparently, conservatives are so fucking brain dead, they can't remember what happened in the 90s.
No.
It's very inconvenient
to remember anything before whatever date we've talked about before. I just wanted to say, in addition to that, that you know the quiet billionaires who would be happy to pay that $6,000 extra in taxes to make everybody go away, you know, we're not hearing from them, but David Axelrod is. I'm sorry to sound so jaded, but I really think that, you know, you can give me all the evidence in the world that yes, Barack Obama is in the pocket of Wall Street, and I agree with you.
Yes.
I totally agree with you.
But he's in the front pocket of Wall Street, not the back pocket of Wall Street.
Yeah. And this jobs bill is a very simple idea that he's pushing, whether he believes that it will ever get passed or not. Is inconsequential. It is a rock in the foundation of his campaign that he's going to use to run on. And the idea that the Republicans are stopping that, even some Democrats, which is really pitiful, but he's put the line in the sand. And I think there's a lot of Wall Streeters that don't care about that. They'd be happy to pay it.
Yeah.
So
But this is again where you and I usually disagree, because I think all such gestures that are being made to appease independent or coax independent or whatever you want to call them, centrist voters, are sacrifices made in an empty church.
Yeah,
there's nobody there.
There's nobody there
who's persuaded. Nobody there is going to convert based on anything that happens in the next 12 months who hasn't already come down either on one side or the other in the last three years or 30 years.
We have two letters disagree with that position.
I know.
And that's the point of our podcast today. We're going to actually read three letters tonight. The first two letters, they are from ex-conservatives.
They are.
Who did it right. Who didn't try to stay on the wingnut teat, so to speak.
No.
They just broke. They said, I break with thee, I break with thee, I break with thee. And they threw dog poop on George W. Bush's shoes.
They did. They did. They sure and more power to them.
Yeah.
I mean, these are people
who, right way to do it.
Who repudiate, who give me hope.
Yep.
If you're looking for hope from legislation, well, good luck. That happens every now and then. But what really happens is, you know, I get all up on my high horse and say, you know, these people are just a fucking dead loss. They're just – there's nobody out there worth
– And then you get proven
saving.
Wrong.
And I get proved wrong. And I am, like most liberals I know, really happy to be proven wrong over things. I would have been dancing in the fucking streets, frankly, if I'd been proven wrong about Iraq.
Yeah.
I would have been thrilled to be wrong about Iraq. I would have been thrilled to be wrong about half the shit. Because it wasn't a game.
Nope.
It was people wrecking my fucking country, and I really didn't want them to do that. But to the right, it's just a fucking game.
Yeah.
If you have an R in your jersey,
you
I'm
win.
For you.
Yes.
And then these letters come in.
The first letter is from Nathan. And Driftglass, you're going to read this one, right?
I'll read this one. Mm-hmm. And Nathan begins, I'd like to tell you a story. I've heard you both agree now that the crazy, stupid, wingnut, idiot, teabagging nutfuckers on the right who wave signs like, keep your government hands off my Medicare, are a lost cause and cannot be saved. I would like to tell you that is not so, sir and miss, actually misses. With joy and glee, I would like to tell you about my own transformation from idiot savant conservative to deviant democratic socialist. First, my wingnut credentials. I bought with my own money 3 of Ann Coulter's books and 2 of Rush Limbaugh's. Had Palin and Beck been around back during 2000 to 2005, I would have loved the hell out of them. I wrote letters to the editor of my local newspaper talking about how awful Bill Clinton was for the country and how wonderful King George would be. I supported Bush during his first administration and would have voted for him had I been old enough. I fell for the, quote, justifications, unquote, for the Iraq War part and parcel. I was a racist, a misogynist, a homophobe, an Islamophobe, and just an all-around awful, loathsome person. Worse, I believed in supply-side economics.
Oh, man.
The first thing that has to happen in order to change someone like this is to remove them from the Fox News feeding tube. When I started my transformation, I was living in a dorm room with no TV, no newspaper, and no internet. I was in a bubble. So first you have to stop the saturation feed that Fox News and conservative hate media provides. I feel like this was the most important step. I stopped sowing salt in the field of my mind. Nathan, by the way, is a very good writer.
Yes, he is.
Then I developed a huge man crush on a liberal guy. He was awesome. Shared my taste in classical music and my distaste for popular music and enjoyed reading just as much as I do. He loaned me a critical book at the time. Those of you out there might recognize it. Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them, by none other than Al Franken, in which he systematically tears down the, at the time, conservative hate book bestseller list. This planted the seed in my head once I had quit salting the field. While all this was happening, I had a wonderful English teacher who delighted in very carefully and very patiently explaining to me exactly why conservatives are always wrong. He and I spent many hours in and outside of class discussing the Bush administration and its crimes. He carefully and systematically picked apart every awful thing Bush and his criminal cronies had done. This made me realize that all the people I had trusted implicitly to inform me about the Bush administration had been lying to me for their own benefit. After this, there was the requisite experimentation, parenthetically, and absolute enjoyment of, close parenthesis, marijuana and various hallucinogens, which didn't exactly affect my transformation, but did sort of seal the deal. So it seems like we need to get rid of Fox News, hand out free copies of Al Franken's books, support progressive English teachers, or all of them, that would probably be better, and give away pot and acid on the street corners, and the rest should follow naturally. I know this is terribly long and somewhat rambling, but I wanted to let you know there is the slightest sliver of hope, even for the great unwashed. Have a great day, both of you, and keep the fire.
Isn't that nice?
That's wonderful. And that came out of a clear blue sky.
Yes, it did. And mm-hmm. So it's possible. It's possible for people to separate from Fox and separate mm-hmm. from their feeding tube, as he put it, mm-hmm. and then find some answers. And I don't think it takes hallucinogenic drugs to see the truth, frankly.
We will leave that to the
wiser fools than I.
We'll leave that to the choice and wisdom of the individual. However, it does point up what is required, which is remove yourself from the source of the contagion, the source of the propaganda. You have to stop listening to people on Fox. Turn them the fuck off. And then find yourself some people who you respect,
mm-hmm.
whose intellect you respect, who can lift the same weight as you, who punch in your weight class, and go back and forth with them, listen with them, exchange with them, and you know, as a liberal, I'm perfectly willing to change my mind once I'm proven wrong. And Lord knows it happens all the time. But if you know, but the other thing that I think this sort of underscores is this has to be done on almost a retail basis.
One-on-one.
Yeah.
And you and I have talked about that and hoping that we are giving vocabulary to the other side of that, to the English teacher, absolutely, to the person in the bar who comes up against this and has mm-hmm. to be able to, you know, not necessarily argue, but argue for the point that Fox News is lying.
Yeah. And this is Tom Hartman on his radio show. Talks occasionally about the water cooler wars.
Yeah.
And that's not what I'm talking about. I don't think that's what we're talking about, because the argument you get into in a bar, and God knows I have, isn't one you're ever going to win, because no matter what you do, eventually the bar closes and you both go home.
And however, he says that's what a liberal would say.
Yeah, well, fuck yeah, a liberal would say that. Yeah, you're pulling the shit out of your ass. Well, Joe, how much does George Soros pay you to say that?
Yeah.
I know all the comeback lines. And I can actually be a conservative. I could do the Stephen Colbert shtick to extended length, as you will attest. I have it down. It's a fucking act. However, if you have constant exposure to a person who you respect in some way, who punches, like I said, in the same weight class as you, and you just continue the conversation one-on-one or two-on-one or three-on-one every day or every couple of days, and you just keep at it and keep at it and keep at it. That is something I can attest really does work.
Well, and part of the vocabulary that we want to hand out this week before we read the second letter, which is also very good, you and I have talked a lot this week about why is the GOP becoming so radical?
Yeah.
And there's a poll out that actually says that the majority of people who self-identify as Republicans out there in the heartland mm-hmm. want taxes on millionaires and billionaires increased.
Yeah.
You know, this is not a out of the mainstream idea. So
no.
Why is the party leadership and the House leadership going far to the right of their own constituents? And that's the kind of question I think can open doors.
Yeah, I agree.
Just something to think about. All right, so we're going to read this one. It's actually also a Facebook post. Raymond on Facebook wrote this, and I think I can provide a link to this because I think he made it public. So here we go. Raymond on Facebook writes, "My resignation from the right in general and the GOP in particular. I have never considered myself a liberal, nor is that a title I am currently applying for. I helped found the Young Republican chapter at Berkeley High in the 80s, fought to get military recruiters onto campus, campaigned for Reagan, and became a Marine at 18. I believe in single-income families, middle-income property owners, well-trained dogs, and skillfully employed firearms. What makes me a conservative as opposed to an anti-American radical is that I understand government is the necessary path to those things. Strong public schools, progressive taxation, judicious regulation, muscular infrastructure, minimum wage, unions, Social Security, and the occasional protective tariff. These things are the bulwarks of the American high-wage working class. This class did not exist prior to the implementation of these programs and has withered with their dismantling." This guy is also a very good writer and very smart.
Amen. Yeah. Amen, Raymond. Amen.
"Unfortunately, the modern GOP, with its libertarian and teabag wings, believes in none of this. It has ceased to be conservative instead of adopting the anti-government and egocentrist philosophies of the late 60s youth movement, a philosophy in which a nation is just a place and a society is just a collection of individuals, a philosophy which dismisses the founding principles of the original colonies and pioneer communities as leftist looterism. The last decent conservatives, such as George Herbert Walker Bush, have retired, leaving four kinds of people in the GOP. Traitors, e.g. the Kochs, messianic dominionist nut jobs, e.g. Michelle Bachmann, useful idiots, a.k.a. the Tea Party, and geriatric bigots on holiday from the John Birch Society, also the Tea Party. It's true, as some liberals charge, that we always had them with us. But we made them wear shoes and keep quiet in front of company."
That's really good.
Yeah. "These people are not conservatives. They are dangerous, bomb-throwing radicals. And if Joe McCarthy were around today, he would drag them before the House Un-American Activities Committee. It's a safe bet that Ike would have no truck with this kind. and I have begun to wonder if even the Gipper would recognize them. Lincoln would stalk away in disgust. A nation, as opposed to a country or a state, is a large extended community. While individuals within it should be personally conservative, seeking self-reliance and ultimately self-mastery, that community must assist its members to find their place within it and be prepared to catch them when they fall. This is a difficult balance to strike, but it has been and can be done. The alternative is societal failure, collective consignment to the dustbin of history. The current conservative movement has become the looters it so despises, building nothing, prepared to raise civilization for a few shiny baubles. Thus I must regretfully resign. P.S., please stop using the title conservative. I'll hold on to it until you remember what it means.
Oh,
very, very
bravo.
Good. And thank you so much for writing that, Raymond.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. So
that's
there's
wonderful.
Hope. There's hope.
It makes me wonder. I mean, these people didn't wander into the conservative movement. They were invited.
Yeah,
they were
yeah.
courted. They were
yes.
lured. They were been pandered to. They didn't just show up accidentally. But it kind of makes me wonder if these people just don't deeply regret that the United States did not ultimately have a nuclear war with the Soviet
yeah.
Union.
Oh, yeah.
And that they –
because they could consolidate power.
They could be the heroic survivors and have nine wives, and somebody would finally suck their dicks,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
They would finally be able to get women and property.
Dr. Strangelove. It's absolutely
yeah.
Dr. Strangelove. Yeah.
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 And because they had their bunkers, they had their beef jerky and their pemmican, they had their shotguns and a million rounds of ammunition and their bottled water and their survivalist magazines and their sneering contempt for – you know, the soft, liberal welfare state,
yeah.
like Bill Kristol has to this day. And I kind of believe that they really hated the fact that a cleansing fire didn't scrape the earth clean and let them come out of their holes with, you know, 10 wives to every one,
yeah.
you know.
Well, it's so funny you should say that. My mother lived as a child next door to a guy who built a bomb shelter. And uh-huh. the guy kept threatening my grandfather, who had four kids, you know, and was a math professor, and my grandfather's name was John. John, when the bomb comes, you can't come over and be in our bomb shelter.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Like,
it's that mentality. No.
Yeah.
No. Keep them out. And there were a whole spate of bomb shelter movies, and there was a new Twilight Zone episode, I believe, about a bomb that accidentally goes off and traps a couple of guys underground. But it's the same mentality.
Yeah.
It's when the shit goes down, man, I'll be ready, and you'll be out there with your new Coke and your wife and your Prius, and fuck you. I'll have all my shit, and you'll be dead. And then, of course, they've been waiting around with their dicks in their hands for 30 years for the bomb to drop, and it never did.
Yeah.
So they're like, okay, come on, can we end the world already so I can be proven right?
Well, maybe that's why Michelle Bachmann wants, you know, there to be Hezbollah missiles in Cuba. It's like, if I can just stir everything in a bowl that's scary,
yeah.
then we'll win.
It explains the confluence on the right between the Dominionists who pray for the end of the world and the Libertarians – who really want the government to be over so they can, you know, go back to a state of nature where might decides everything, mm-hmm. force decides everything.
Yep.
And it really is like they're just totally disappointed that World War III never happened
yeah.
and they're stuck with all the ammunition and MREs and and nothing to do with them. So
MREs
to,
from
know,
the 50s.
The
you know,
50s,
they had cigarettes in them, too. That was
yeah.
the thing.
Well, yeah.
Camels.
Nylons and chocolate and gold. But yeah, it just struck me that really these are the people that are disappointed that World War III never happened.
Yeah.
And so they're trying to kickstart that process one more time because, you know, when the shit comes down, man, I'll be ready.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? The liberal approach is, hey, let's make really, really sure, work really hard that the shit never comes down.
Mm-hmm.
That catastrophe, whether it's environmental, economic, or nuclear exchange, let's try really hard to make sure that doesn't happen because that's
a bad thing.
And let's
make sure that clean rain falls on Republicans and Democrats alike.
Yeah,
you
like
know?
Mercy.
Clean water for everybody.
So
I want to read Carter's letter. His email is
right.
short. But it brings in the whole Occupy Wall Street movement, which we still need to keep talking about. I noticed today that the cover of Time magazine this week is an article by Joe Klein about the new rise of the silent majority.
Oh.
And all of a sudden, that's what we're going to call Occupy Wall Street is the silent majority. So good. All right. Let's do that.
That's great. That's
But Carter brings in mainstream media coverage, and I think it's really important, the things he had to say. So here is Carter's email from yesterday. Driftglass, you said that our media doesn't have the language to express the suffering of the 99%. I started thinking of the coverage of the mainstream media in the early days of the complete clusterfuck that was Katrina. I remember at least part of the media, and it may have been cable, I recall an Olbermann special comment that made me stand up in my living room and just point at the TV, being astonishment and outrage that such a thing could happen here in America. Human disasters overseas, like Haiti, for instance, get covered with that same sort of flavor. It can't happen here. Mm-hmm. But the same thing in both cases seems to be a level of smugness. That might happen there to those people over there, but never to us, we real Americans in real America. Now the media is confronted with the limits of the ability to hold itself smugly above it all. That sort of it only happens in banana republics, or in New Orleans' case, the poor part of the country, is visibly, widely, demonstrably here, capital H. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The safe geographic refuge of that stuff happens someplace else is gone because Occupy is everywhere. And I want to interrupt and argue, Occupy is in New York fucking City where mm-hmm. they are. They can't That's escape right. it. And we've talked many times about the bubble that is New York City and L.A. and Washington, D.C.
Oh, it's why Anthony Weiner had to resign.
Yeah, yeah. If he'd been in Kansas, he might have been able to hold out until his pension went through, right? Mm-hmm. But it's New York City, so it's not only national news, it's local news. So he says, because Occupy is everywhere. The media is forced to meet the occupiers where they are, and that, I feel like, is where the language breaks down. They know how to talk about suffering, but they only know how to talk about it in a way to numb, not engage.
Thank you very much, Carter.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, the fact that this is in their backyard and it's being brought to them makes a big difference.
You see them taking refuge, as the media does, throwing poll numbers at each other.
Yep.
Very, very rich people, mostly in New York, mostly white, a lot of the men reading numbers at each other. Because that's what makes the numbing possible. That's what allows them to have that emotional distance between the suffering represented in those numbers and the fact that they're just reading a bunch of statistics about what people feel about Herman Cain's plan. And what this segment of this voting block, of this subsection, of this group from this state believes to be true about Mitt Romney's Mormonism. It's meaningless.
You're listening to the Professional Left Podcast, professionalleft.blogspot.com.
The perfect metaphor for Occupy Wall Street and the perfect metaphor for the media is, everybody take a drink now, Edgar Allan Poe. Edgar Allan Poe's The Mask of the Red Death.
Yes.
Everybody get out there and read it. It's 3 pages long, but it's, you know, the rich people wall themselves up in a castle. They take all the treasure and all the money, et cetera, because there's a horrible plague sweeping land, and they wall themselves off in a fucking palace and party all day and all night because they're safe from it. And then the Red Death gets in. And the last paragraph of that story about how they all died in the despairing posture of their fall and the – I'm doing this from memory, so pardon me – and the Red Death held illimitable sway over all or something like that. It's a costume party. And at the very end of the costume party, the last guest unmasks himself, and it's the personification of death. These people in New York and D.C. have walled themselves off from the rest of us with their money and their power and their media and their separate reality. And their job for the last 30 years is to keep us the fuck out, to make sure we do not in any way participate in their conversation, which is why you have people like David Brooks just talking out of his ass about things he knows nothing about because he wants to control the message. Mm-hmm. And the message is hippies are dirty, scruffy, awful leftist bomb-throwing cretins who have no place in telling elite opinion leaders like him what to say or think. His job's to tell them what to think, not the other way around. He's worked very hard his whole career sucking corporate dick to get to where he is now, to let a bunch of hippies take that away from him.
And, of course, hippies are young people. And
yeah, hippies,
the future,
well, hippies are,
and are, the, yeah. you know, are going to be the yes. voters in forever, you know, long after yes. David Brooks passes this mortal coil.
Well, I would dare say the average Occupy Wall Street person in New York probably has more degrees than David Brooks
yeah,
does.
Yeah.
and probably knows more about American history than David Brooks, whose major, I believe, was history. But now that they've very wisely chosen to do this in Wall Street, the plague is inside the castle now. Now they can't ignore it. Now it's under their, literally under their windows and next door to where they are, which is why it's getting any coverage at all. Anybody who makes David Brooks crap himself in terror is okay with me.
Yeah. Well, also, we saw a sign this week, support Occupy Wall Street in Springfield, Illinois, and literally 400 feet from a cornfield. This is spreading.
Yeah. And there's no more symbol of the Midwest than the state capital of Illinois.
Yeah, right,
This is the fucking heartland, man. This is the heartland.
Well, and it is the state capital of Illinois. It's also only 116,000 people. And it is full of cornfields. You drive to the movies, you drive through a cornfield to get there.
Yeah.
I also wanted to say, speaking of generational politics.
Well, and one more thing. It's also Lincoln's hometown.
Yeah.
This is also the hometown of the best Republican who ever lived.
Yeah, and it's where Obama announced, and it's where he introduced Joe Biden to the nation as his running mate. And so there's a lot going on here, but it's also a small town. And it's small town in a way that I was shocked when I saw support Occupy Wall Street on a business, a sign on a business that said that. I was at the YMCA swimming pool yesterday, and the lifeguards, there were three lifeguards there, young women, and I mean young women, under 24 years old. For their uniform, they wear a swimsuit, and then they're allowed to wear a t-shirt over their swimsuit while they're doing their lifeguarding, but the t-shirt has to be red. It's like working for Target. You know, you can wear khaki pants and a red shirt. Well, you can wear a swimsuit with a red t-shirt over it. One of the lifeguards, I only saw two of the t-shirts, close enough to know what they were, but one of the t-shirts was Grateful Dead, and the other was No Hate.
Yeah.
And I was just sitting there in Springfield, Illinois, at the YMCA pool, two girls, and I'll call them girls because they were young enough to be my daughters, wearing political, I consider Grateful Dead t-shirts to be political, making a statement, These girls are not corporate. They're not impressed with corporate. And, I'm not saying that they weren't marketed these t-shirts and they aren't victims of that marketing and so forth. We can get into that forever. But the statement that they wanted to make with their work t-shirt was political.
Yep.
And it wasn't David Brooks's politics that was being reflected there. And it never will be. They have formed their politics. And it's too late now.
Oh, yeah.
Geriatric bigots on holiday from the John Birch Society. It is way too late for them. That ship has sailed.
Yeah, they're going away. They're
going away. And like it or not, gravity and mortality are catching up with them. And that's the sad thing to say about your generation. What kind of world are you leaving behind? You're leaving behind a world full of hippies. Congratulations.
Yep. Yep, and we will not let you drag us into the grave with you.
Right, right.
Sorry.
On that note,
we're not going to permit the end of the world to happen.
No, we're not.
And for you to finally be proven how right you were about the softness and folly.
And we're raising three kids. Those of us who are recording and producing this podcast, we're raising three kids, and the oldest one came home. He's going to be 13 next week. He came home last night. He had an ad all written and was so excited. A world under Bush. 3, 2, 1. And we had to explain to him that Johnson's Daisy ad had been done 35 years ago, 40 years ago. But we went on YouTube and showed it to him.
Sorry, dude.
So we're been there, done that. That's been done. But, yeah, it was great that he had come up with that. He'll be making ads for
Malia.
Malia. There
Malia's,
you go.
Malia's campaign,
She'll be a socialist by that time, I swear. She'll be wearing No Hate. Didn't she have a peace sign on her shirt that made all the wingnuts go insane a couple of years ago, a couple summers ago?
Oh, probably.
She was on vacation overseas, and she had a peace sign on her T-shirt. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Shall I do the one-minute movie review?
Oh, yeah. Let's do our one-minute movie review, because then we can write off our $5 tip. ticket. We went to the movies at 10:30 in the morning so that we could pay $5 to go to the movies. But we saw two movies this weekend
And we saw two movies back to back, and they were both about machines beating the crap out of each other.
Yes, they were.
And one was a joyless exercise in post-industrial failure and in the failure of post-industrial America and the collapse of modern manhood. And the other one was Real Steel.
Yeah. Well, the other one was Ides of March. We saw
Ides of March, which was a thoroughly depressing.
It was horrible. I hated every single person in that movie.
Yeah. One guy had one good speech, and that was it. I liked – there was a speech by Paul Giamatti. I enjoyed the craftsmanship of it. But it was a joyless – the best man, which is Henry Fonda and Cliff Robertson, and the candidate had a – sad baby. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it was this. And this is a movie that absolutely did not need to be made at all.
Yeah. Well, it needed to be made so that people would be able to worship Ryan Gosling and his cuteness.
Yes, and I don't want to see his foot-shaped face, you know, that 40 feet tall, staring back at me anytime in the near future. However, it was a story about a post-collapse America. Except the thing that had collapsed was politics.
Yes.
It was a story about the failure of manhood and the search for a father figure. Since I'm doing this for college credit, I'll use all the bullshit. A failure of manhood, a failure of fatherhood, and a search for redemption through attachment to a thing larger than yourself. And the ultimate message is, fuck you, there's no such thing. Our lead character kept looking for a daddy, a father figure to emulate and to admire. And in the end, everything just sucks and is awful. Real Steel is exactly the same movie, in a sense. It is a post-industrial America, almost. It is a failure of a man and manhood, a search for a missing father, and redemption, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I got to give myself big points, because before we even went in
the
movie, I said, you know what? There was this Twilight Zone episode by Richard Matheson.
Everybody take a drink.
I had guessed it was Richard Matheson. I'd guessed the approximate year, and it was about robot boxing and human being putting himself. It was Lee Marvin who was in it. It's a wonderful episode. And the near future of this movie is delightful. All the crops are green. The sky is always blue. There are windmills everywhere. And although these people are poor, they can afford giant industrial robots who can walk around and bring them beer.
Oh, and they can afford very advanced GPS units for their truck.
Yeah.
And, yeah, even though they are on the edge of hunger, basically.
Yeah. These people are, they're hanging on by their nails, barely able to make any money at all, constantly staying ahead of their debtors. Meanwhile, in the back of their truck, you have a 12-foot-tall robot that can, you know.
And a piece of glass that. With HP on it. I mean, the product placement was all over this movie, but this HP panel of glass, it's like an iPad, but it's transparent. That is the GPS unit and the phone unit, and everything is clear.
And everybody has one.
Everybody has one, yeah.
Oh, by the way, the woman from Lost
plays the girlfriend,
plays the girlfriend, and of course, Hugh Jackman plays our hero. Hugh Jackman. And in the very near future, rich people all wear ascots. And poor people are incredibly attractive.
Yes. And the villainous of this movie, I had to point this out to you. This is bad news for the world's favorite celebrity, is that the really evil villainous in this movie looks just like Kim Kardashian.
Yeah.
And
you said that, and I don't.
You said, I don't know what you're talking about. And then I showed you a picture of Kim Kardashian. You went, oh, wow. They really modeled the villainous after this person. Yes, they did. So.
And it was a completely.
We took the teenage boy to see this.
Yeah. And it was a totally artificial.
At 10:30 in the morning. I don't think he knew quite what was going on. Come on, we're going to the movies. What?
Based on the short story by Richard Matheson.
Yes.
Spielberg took that story plus the Rumble in the Jungle, plus Rocky, plus every boxing movie you've ever seen, put him in a blender, add a cute kid, and that's this movie.
And Spielberg wasn't the director. He was the executive producer, but it definitely was a Spielberg product.
And it's, for what it is, it's a good movie.
It certainly
made me feel better than Ides of March, which just was horribly depressing.
It was a completely mechanical exercise. You could feel the Spielberg machine reaching into your heart and playing with your emotions nakedly. But he does it really well. Yeah. So. You know, I don't fault him for following a tried and true plot. He executes it very well. And while I would not have gone to see this movie for $10 a throw,
for $5 with a 13-year-old, it was fine.
It was totally good movie. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I liked, you know, the good guys win, the bad guys lose. Like in Casablanca, they shot the Nazis, so to speak.
Yep.
Everybody you want to see win wins. It's an example of how you can take sort of tropes and turn it into something at least entertaining. Whereas Ides of March was just fucking depressing.
Well, and Ides of March could have been a good movie.
Yes.
If the disenchanted young man at the end had something to cling to, yeah, either a person to cling to, or I'm going to continue to work because I can make the world a better place, or I'm going to just keep trying. But there was no hope in anywhere in this movie.
And he's the protagonist. You know, this is the sort of movie my most paranoid moments believe that, you know, China invests in to dispirit the American public. You know, everything is hopeless. Might as well give up now. Mm-hmm. Because he is the protagonist. He is the person who is in the first scene of the movie, the last scene of the movie, has the most lines, has the most dialogue, and is classically the protagonist of this movie. He's also the person that we as the audience are supposed to identify with. He's our in. Mm-hmm. And his arc is so fucking depressing.
Yep.
And so there's debased and so awful and ends so.
And when he wins, he loses. Absolutely.
And it's like, okay, I get a tragedy. I understand. At the end of Hamlet, everybody dies.
Yes, it's sad.
Got that. But, you know, that's not what I thought this movie was going to be. And if it was going to be a tragedy, it should have been a goddamn tragedy, yeah, and not just 2 hours and whatever minutes of just depressing slog through the sewer of American politics. At the end, you turn around and say, yep, it's a fucking sewer. It's hopeless. There's no way to change anything. We're all fucked. Might as well go home. By the way, thank you for your money. Come back and see us in the fall.
Yeah.
So we saw these back to back, and I wouldn't have suggested reviewing them, but we saw two popular American entertainments back to back. One.
Which we never do. I mean, we've never been to two movies in one. I haven't been to two movies in one weekend since my 20s.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But those $10.35 shows are pretty good.
They are.
10:30
a.m.
They are.
So, yeah. So that's our movie review for this week. Next week, Puss in Boots in 3D.
No, we're not.
And I'll throw on some old episodes of Firefly talking about that.
Oh, gosh. You've been threatening that for days now.
Yeah, good show.
Hey, we've
good
got show. Some big news. Our 100th episode is coming up November 4th. And we have had a wonderful offer from a woman. I don't know if I'm allowed to say her name, so I won't yet.
No,
but
no, not yet.
She offered to write a professional left app for Apple products. Mm-hmm. And through working with her, she has done that and is submitting it to Apple. And we are hoping to have it out, a professional left app, by our 100th episode.
We are.
And it'll be one of those 99-cent deals. We'll probably get 20 cents out of it per app. But it's exciting. It's, you know, mm-hmm, a professional left app. And it's going to have access to both of our blogs, access to a podcast, and then because it's an app, we'll be able to put bonus content on the app, which we're excited about. And so we'll do that every once in a while. We're still figuring that out, but we know we can do it now. So that's exciting.
It came out of a clear blue sky.
Yeah, she wrote us and said, let's do this.
Yeah, I like what you do. I'm excited about what you do. Here's my skill set. Mm-hmm. I can help you do this. And she has just been patient and cheerful and delightful to work with the entire time.
And we have another listener who has helped us get onto Blip TV and put our podcast mm-hmm. up at Blip TV, which hopefully is going to be helpful to us as we try the workaround for Facebook. Facebook has stopped playing audio. I think they're developing some kind of way that they can guarantee that everyone that posts audio on Facebook has the rights to use it. And in the meantime, nobody can play audio on Facebook. So the workaround is video. And so we will have, hopefully this weekend, Blip TV videos up at Facebook. And thank you very much to Kevin, who our listener who helped me set that up.
And one more thing, Will. Well, it's two more things. One is I'm having my fundraiser. I'm deep in the middle of my fundraiser, which is going to go on for about 40 days and 40 nights, I think. That's a good biblical.
That's what unemployment does for you, doesn't it?
I know. We're going to have another fundraiser in like 4 minutes. Yes. Fundraiser day 75, America held hostage. Come by. Have a
corn dog.
have a corn dog, drop in a buck. It goes into my own personal account. But I appreciate it. And I appreciate everybody who's come by. And it's been pretty successful so far on my terms. And it's just been wonderful and reaffirming and so forth. Also, for reasons that passeth all understanding, the guy who is Will at Work, I believe who's at Will at Work,
yeah,
on Mad Owl blog, took a like to one of my tweets, which is like one of my little five-finger exercises, and posted it up at the Mad Owl blog.
Yeah.
So suddenly I get this little burst of traffic coming from Rachel Maddow's site. And I go back, and there's not only my little
featured.
Tweet, but
it's
also
featured at Mattablog. That is so awesome.
Which is kind of cool. And then somebody has said very nice things and provided a link to my site in the comment section.
And then
so
your wife went over and said, "Yeah, and there's a podcast too."
That's right. And don't forget the podcast.
Don't forget the podcast. So
you come for the graphics, but you stay for the pie.
See,
really,
see how that works out.
All right.
And we want all of you 99%ers to know that you can actually join a very exclusive club of 1%ers, because approximately from time to time it goes down from there. But most of the time we are looking to – are aiming for 1% of our listeners contributing to the podcast.
And during any given week.
During any given week, 1% of our listeners actually pony up $5 to support our podcast. We appreciate that so much. There is a PayPal link at the Professional Left website, which is professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can listen to us for free with no download and no registration. You can also mail a check to the Professional Left podcast at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791. And you can write us at either one of those addresses. Our email address is proleftpodcast@gmail.com. Or you can send a letter to our P.O. Box, and we read everything that you send us, and we're very grateful. Feel free, again, to write us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, with any ideas or thoughts about our 100th episode or anything else that's on your mind. Be aware that if you write us at that address, as you noticed, we reserve the right to read your email or letter on the air, unless you say otherwise.
So, Blue Gal, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
The Internet Kitties say, screw your intellectual film criticism. We're counting the days until Die Hard 5.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
This podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2011, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Peabag Nutfuckers. Wait a minute. I didn't agree to read that.